Good morning. This is Chair Rena Moran, pursuant to House Rule 10.01. I call this remote meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Ms. Sparkman, please take the roll.
Chair Moran.
Present.
Moran, present. Vice Chair Olson.
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Garofalo.
Present.
Garofalo, present. Representative Albright.
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Becker Finn. Representative Becker Finn. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present.
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Hansen.
Present.
Hansen, present. Representative Hassan. Representative Hassan. Representative Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Representative Johnson.
Johnson, present.
Johnson, present. Representative Kreisha. Representative Kreisha. Representative Liebling.
Liebling, present.
Liebling, present. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Lilly, present. Representative Mariani. Representative Mariani. Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt, present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Miller.
Miller, present.
Miller, present. Representative Nash.
Nash, present.
Nash, present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Noor.
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative O'Neill. Representative O'Neill. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski, present.
Pawlowski, present. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg, present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Pinto, excused. Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
Schumacher, present. Representative Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Representative Scott.
Here.
Scott, present. Representative Sundin.
Present.
Sundin, present. Representative Becker Finn.
Present.
Becker Finn, present. Representative Hassan.
Hassan is here.
Hassan, present. Representative Kreisha. Representative Mariani. Representative O'Neill. That concludes the roll. There is a quorum present.
Great. A quorum is present. So our first agenda item is approval of the minutes from our hearing on Tuesday, April 20th. The minutes were included in the hearing documents emailed to you by committee staff. Are there any questions or corrections to the minutes? Okay, Vice Chair Olson, would you like to move the minutes from Tuesday, April 20th?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So Vice Chair Olson moves approval of the minutes for April 20, 2021. Please unmute briefly for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. So members, we have only one other item on the agenda today. Senate File 1470 has been procedurally matched at the front desk with House File 12 from Chair Houseman. So we will have, we will first need to put the House language onto the bill. The funding element of this bill has already been addressed in the housing omnibus, so the committee is not authorizing any new spending today, and this can be a brief hearing. Vice Chair Olson, would you like to move the bill and then move to substitute the House language?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that Senate File 1470 be recommended for placement on the general register. And I will also move to substitute the language from House File 12 onto the bill.
Thank you. All in favor of the oath and motion to substitute the House language, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
No. Prevails. We are now working from the language of House File 12. Chair Houseman, welcome back to the committee. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, House File 12 is, once the eviction moratorium ends, we need an off-ramp to avoid chaos. We need a plan. You've already noted the fiscal impact was $44,000, but that has been carried in the housing bill, which passed on the House floor a week ago. And that's the fiscal impact. I'm assuming you want to hear something about the content of the bill as well. What is your plan as chair?
Yes, Chair Houseman. Can you just give us
an
overview?
So on March 13, 2020, issued executive order declaring a peacetime emergency related to the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic. He subsequently issued a number of related executive orders making changes that would help keep Minnesotans safe during the pandemic. This included an order which prohibited evictions except in cases where a tenant seriously endangers other residents or is engaging in criminal behavior. That was later modified, but it's the idea was it's impossible to stay safe at home if you are evicted from your home. Nothing in any of these executive orders removed the responsibility for tenants to pay the full amount of rent owed. And that, of course, is one of the issues that we dealt with partly with the housing assistance last year. The bill maintains the prohibition on evictions due to nonpayment and allows evictions in cases where a tenant poses a danger to others, engages in criminal behavior, or remains in the property after they've been notified to vacate so the owner or owner's family member can move in. Landlords may not assess late fees when nonpayment of rent is due to a tenant's COVID-19 related income loss. They also cannot increase rent more than 6% and cannot increase rent during the peacetime emergency if they have increased rent during the previous 12 months. Just an aside, members, it's been interesting to me in the debate about this bill and others. Landlords seem to have changed their names. They are now using the term housing providers, which I think is an interesting change. During the 12 months immediately following the end of the current peacetime emergency, landlords who intend to file an eviction for any reason other than those allowed during the peacetime emergency must provide written notice to the tenant at least 60 days before filing an eviction. No late fees may be assessed and rent may not be increased during that 60-day period. That 60-day period is intended to allow a transition. And I'll speak later to the amount of federal money that can help us through this process. Just a point, the eviction moratorium wasn't issued as housing policy. It was issued as a public health imperative. Most of the discussion on this issue by those who want a complete and immediate end to the eviction moratorium focuses on the concept as if it is purely housing policy. That's misleading because this was never truly about housing. It's always been about public health, ensuring that people were staying home to help stop the spread of COVID-19 meant that we had to ensure they weren't displaced from their homes. And at a time when so many came with a distinct and immediate threat of furthering the spread of COVID-19, at a time when cases were spiking, we could not afford that risk. The research has been done, by the way. Areas who suddenly ended their eviction moratorium in 2020 saw spikes of COVID-19 cases. A study published in November from a team of researchers at UCLA found that between the start of the pandemic and the federal eviction moratorium in September, evictions led to 433,000 additional cases and almost 11,000 additional deaths. So there was, for those in 2020 who didn't have a plan, it did have an impact, a negative impact. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, but we're currently still in the tunnel. We don't want to replace a health crisis with an eviction crisis. One additional piece, a 60-day notice period after the moratorium ends allows time to access rental assistance funds. Minnesota has $375 million to help assist individuals who have struggled to pay rent or associated fees during the pandemic. While at first glance, it may seem like a lot to give individuals a two-month notice before filing an eviction, that timing allows them or the landlords to apply for assistance funds. This way, they are not unnecessarily displaced and the landlord can get what they are owed. Housing instability has a ripple effect to other areas of life. So for us, there's a strong public interest in ensuring housing stability in times when we aren't experiencing a pandemic, and even more so when we are. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present this bill.
Thank you, Chair Houseman. Members, are there any questions or comments to the bill authors? Let's see here. Okay, Representative Garofalo, would you like to go first, or are you?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I could, I would appreciate that. So, yes. I had sought recognition on adoption of the substitution of the language, but you didn't see it. But that's okay. That's one of the limitations of virtual meetings. So, Representative Houseman, I guess, can you just briefly explain for us what were the problems? What is wrong with the compromise language that was adopted by the Senate?
Chair Houseman.
Well, that was compromise language in the Senate. We haven't found our compromise language yet. So I think that's a fairly simple question.
Well, Representative Garofalo.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Houseman, the language that passed out of the Senate had bipartisan support. There was 45 votes. Obviously, you swapped that language out. What was wrong with that language? That the compromise is always very hard, right? So it's something that we want to encourage, not discourage at this point in session. What was wrong with that? What were the disagreements that the House DFL had with that language?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, that did not include any House members in its conversation. So it was conversation in the Senate, but I think you understand that House and Senate have separate conversations.
Sure. And Madam Chair and Representative Houseman, I appreciate that. But on the substance of the bill, what are the parts of it that are not acceptable to House members?
Since I have not had any opportunity to invite House members to be part of that conversation, we haven't had an opportunity yet to indicate what we would agree to and what we would not.
Okay, well, so Madam Chair and Representative Houseman, again, I appreciate that fact. And I will tell you that when I look at this issue, my primary concern is that it looks like the DFL is using the temporary crisis of the COVID situation to try to make permanent changes in Minnesota law, that they're trying to leverage that. And so for that reason, Madam Chair, I'm going to ask for a move of reconsideration on the substitution of this language, and I would request a roll call on that. The reason, Madam Chair, and this is primarily as a result, we're now at the point in the legislative session where we've got the fighting out of the way. You know, we'll have the Health and Human Services debate on the House floor today. There'll be more fighting. But this is a time for the chambers and the governor to start moving towards one another and start reaching conclusions on these items. And in this area, the eviction moratorium, there is real damage being caused to real families. I received an email this morning from a constituent. His first name is Bob. I'm not going to give his full name. But this is Representative Houseman. This is what he wrote to me. He said, "Pat, my father is in a nursing home. We are out of funds to pay for his care and need to sell his home to cover cost of care. The problem is we can't evict the renter out of his home due to the emergency order. Is there an exception to Governor Walz's emergency order that allows us to remove the renter?" Now, my understanding of that, the answer to that question is no. There are some exceptions to the governor's emergency order, but this is a situation that we're seeing across the state where people are unable to sell their homes. They have people who have had a lease that's expired I didn't get the memo on the landlord versus housing provider terminology, so I'll use the term housing provider. But to my fundamental question here, is it fair to say that the DFL is using the temporary COVID crisis to try to force a permanent change in Minnesota law?
Chair Houseman.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I will tell you the most unsatisfying thing to do at this particular point is to frame this in a partisan way.
Representative Garofalo.
Okay, I appreciate that the description of it may be unsatisfying, but is it accurate, though? From this member's perspective, that's the way things look, is that I look at the underlying bill that is we'll be voting on the reconsideration here now. I look at that, and I don't see any way there's any bipartisan support for that. This is moving us backwards away from reaching an agreement, something that we have to accomplish. I will tell you that yesterday I had conversations with staff when I saw what was on the agenda, and I talked to a couple of members on our side of the aisle, and I talked to staff on our side of the aisle, and I said I was genuinely confused by what you guys were doing. This doesn't make any sense to be backing away. You know, I expect the House would make some changes to the Senate language. You know, take the Senate language and make it kind of, you know, more in line with objectives, but to completely wipe out the language that 45 members voted for in a contentious issue that's been going on for over a year, it struck me as very odd, and I do not understand the play here on this. I don't understand the not only the legislative strategy but the substantive reasons for blowing up what was a bill that is moving towards bipartisan agreement. Representative Hausman, you and I have known each other for, gosh, this is our 17th year I've known you. Wow, it's real. It's been a long time. I feel like I know you well, and I know that you understand legislative history and where things are going. But this is kind of an unusual move by the DFL, the House DFL, that is, to marginalize an agreement and to start up a new fight on this. I would be surprised if there are 68 DFL votes for this bill, but I guess I wouldn't be shocked. And if there's any insight you can provide me, either privately or publicly, our side of the aisle is confused by what you guys are doing on this, in blowing up and backing away from the table and what have been some honest, good felt efforts towards a bipartisan agreement on this. So I'll be voting in favor of reconsideration, and I encourage members to do the same.
Madam Chair.
Chair Hausman.
We have not been at the table yet. Here's the way our process works. The Senate passes a bill, and the House passes a bill, and we meet in conference committee. That's when we're at the table. At this point, the House has not been at the table or any part of the conversation. Here's just one issue you may recall when the budget bill came, I talked about the fact that 43 states provide some sort of eviction notice. We are one of only 7 states that provide no notice, that a tenant has no opportunity to prepare to either get current on their bill or to find another place to live. That's one of the ongoing discussions that we will continue to have in conference committee.
Okay, so Madam Chair, that's our concern, is that, again, rather than lifting the eviction moratorium, we're seeing members try to use the COVID crisis as a tool and leverage for making permanent changes in Minnesota law. And this is not a good sign. This is concerning, that if that's what some members are going to be relying on, is trying to change permanent law in an effort to have any changes in these emergency orders. This is a very, very disturbing trend, and it signals that the emergency powers aren't going to be going away anytime soon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Chair Garofalo, my question to you, I'm sorry, Representative Garofalo, my question to you is, did you vote for substituting the language originally?
Madam Chair, I voted on the prevailing side of the motion.
You did vote for that. Okay. All right, that's good to know. So my question is, well, we have other questions, so why don't I go to the other questions before we go to move forward. Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, I can wait with my questions for after the motion is reconciled, because I believe we do have to deal with Representative Garofalo's motion to reconsider first. Unless I'm incorrect.
Representative Scott.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering if maybe nonpartisan staff could give us some direction on if what Representative Nash said is accurate. I think that when there's a motion on the table, you have to address that before you go on with any other discussions. But I'm wondering if nonpartisan staff could help with that. Answer that question, Madam Chair.
To the nonpartisan staff, can you give us some clarity on whether we need to move with the motion before we go to other questions?
Madam Chair, members, this is Colby, House Research. You know, I think if members want to speak to Representative Garofalo's motion, then of course it makes sense for the chair to call upon the members and give them a chance to speak. Otherwise, I think it's probably the chair's discretion when to move to the to vote to reconsider. I will note under House rules in committee, it's not necessary for the member to have voted on the prevailing side in order to reconsider. That's different from the protocol on the floor.
Representative Scott.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So is that your intent then, Madam Chair, is to have discussion before voting, or is the discussion going to be limited to just to the motion, or is it to the substitute language of the bill as it stood as adopting the DE?
My original, Representative Scott, my original thought was that we would have this discussion, but why don't we just move for the reconsideration of the language to the bill?
All right. Thanks, Madam Chair, and then I'll have questions after that then.
Okay. So why don't we move directly to the reconsideration of the bill? And let's do a roll call on the reconsideration of the bill to Ms. Clark.
Madam Chair, the motion to reconsider can be a voice vote by the committee. I believe the roll call that Representative Garofalo was requesting would be on the motion to substitute the House language once we have that motion back before us.
Well, Madam Chair and to House staff, I am requesting a motion on the, I am requesting a roll call on the motion to reconsider.
If I could give a
closing speech on that, while some of our members maybe wanted to highlight the differences between the two languages, the language that was in the bipartisan agreement and the language that's in the House file, they can feel free to do that, but I would like to give a closing speech before we vote on it.
Why don't we go ahead? Representative Garofalo, to you.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair and members, as I mentioned in my earlier, it's always hard to reach compromise, right, especially in this polarized, highly political environment. And so whenever we have an opportunity to work together and move towards agreement, it's a good thing. Now, I'm not saying that the Senate file is the language the Senate passed is perfect. Certainly there are some clunkers in it, but there really is no reason for us, and it's no reason for the House DFL to take that agreement and not use it as a basis for further agreement, to take it and completely replace it with permanent changes in housing policy that are leveraging the COVID crisis. It really is the wrong thing to do. Now, as I mentioned in my previous comments, our side of the aisle doesn't understand what you guys are doing. And in reaching out to stakeholders in the housing providers, to use that term, speaking with members of both sides of the aisle in the Senate, no one knows what you guys are doing and why you're doing it. This is very reminiscent of the COVID-19 agreement we had last year on distributing local funds, where out of nowhere, the House DFL just showed up and blew up what had been a four-party agreement. We don't understand what you guys are trying to do. And at this time where we have less than a month left in the legislative session, to be going on a hard bend left, to be backing away from the negotiating table, this is not the way to wrap things up. And rather than a tool for having this be addressed in conference committee, this is just setting up a sequel of what happened 2 years ago. This is a step towards setting it up so that we're going to have a leadership tribunal. We're going to have one member of the House, one member of the Senate, and the governor writing all these bills and then coming back and telling people what they have to vote for. This is a symptom of a bigger problem, and this action is going to help facilitate that, not in a good, collaborative, positive manner, but rather in a negative and reactive manner. So, Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair and members, I would encourage members to vote for the motion to reconsider so we can have a more thoughtful debate, so we can use the the steps that have been taken, the compromises that have been taking place, that we can build off that for final a bill that will be agreed to by the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, and take a step away from this brinksmanship and polarization. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. So with that, members, what I'd like for us to do, we're going to do a roll call on reconsideration of the language that we just voted to move on. And so, Ms. Markman, please take the roll on the reconsideration of the language.
Chair Moran?
No.
Moran, no. Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Olson, no. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright?
Yes.
Albright, aye. Representative Becker-Finn?
No.
Becker-Finn, no. Representative Bernardi?
No.
Bernardi, no. Representative Eklund?
No.
Eklund, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Hassan?
No.
Hassan, no. Representative Hertas?
Yes.
Hertas, aye. Representative Hornstein?
No.
Hornstein, no. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Johnson, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, aye.
Kreisha, aye. Representative Liebling?
No.
Liebling, no. Representative Lilly?
No.
Lilly, no. Representative Mariani, excused. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, no.
Marquardt, no. Representative Miller?
Miller, aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nash?
Nash, aye.
Nash, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Representative Noor?
Noor, no.
Noor, no. Representative O'Neill, excused. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, no.
Pawlowski, no. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Pinto, excused. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Schultz?
No.
Schultz, no. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Sundin?
No.
Sundin, no. There are 10 ayes and 16 nays.
So there have been 10 ayes and 16 nays. The motion does not prevail. We will move forward with the House language. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Disappointed that we were not able to reconsider, but I do have some questions for the author of the House language. And I'll start off with this. I guess I'm just stymied by what really look like permanent changes or an on-ramp to permanent changes here. You know, in a time when landlords have been effectively prohibited from making changes, much like Representative Garofalo shared in his intro, I've had a similar story. One of my close friends owned a townhome. They wanted to sell it. The person that was residing there knew that they wanted to sell it. They had an active buyer, and the person had initially said, well, I don't really want to move, but I will. And then they completely dropped the plow and said, well, under these rules, you can't evict me, even though you have the ability to sell it. That's problematic. We're now dealing with people's real property. We're dealing with their livelihoods, and we're making it so that they're not able to utilize their properties in a way that they see fit, which seems exceptionally counterintuitive and un-American. But, I guess one of the principal concerns that I have is this, that right now the housing providers or landlords have been told that they cannot raise their fees, their rent, if you will. If they had a rent increase last year, and House nonpartisan can clarify this for me, but if they had a housing increase last year, they may not lay a new rent on the table in front of the renter this year. And I guess I would ask either the bill author to clarify that or to corroborate that, or House nonpartisan, because that's troubling. If they had a rent increase last year, based on the morphology of the bill, they cannot have a rent increase this year. So I guess that would be my first question among many that I have, Madam Chair.
Chair Houseman.
Or nonpartisan.
Can we get some clarification from nonpartisan staff on whether or not landlords can increase, cannot increase rent? Was there like a timeline of 60 days? Nonpartisan staff.
Chair and members, this is Mary Mullen with House Research. On page 2 of the bill, there's a provision that says the landlord is prohibited from increasing the rent for residential tenancies more than 6%, and in no case during the application of the peacetime emergency can there be a rent increase if the rent increase was, it happened once in the previous 12 months. So while the peacetime emergency continues, you would not be able to increase the rent, say this year, if you're talking about 2021, if you did increase it in the 12 months previous.
Representative Nash.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And that makes one of my points, is that Chair Houseman is now saying that even though you had a rent increase last year, if you are trying to have a rent increase this year, which is not abnormal for people in a yearly lease, they do see rent increases year over year, you can't do it. So you can't manage your property on your own. You have to turn to the government and bow down, kiss a ring, and you're now told that you're not able to manage your property in the way that you see fit. And Chair Houseman is the one that's bringing that policy forward. So that's troubling. But more troubling is that this creates, from my reading, an impairment of contract, that the person who signed the contract is now not going to be held accountable to the language that they signed in the contract, but the landlord is. So if Chair Houseman would please let me know how she plans on actually sticking up for the people who are the renter or the landlords. This is just a complete infringement of people's constitutional rights. They are entering a contract with somebody who signs that they are agreeing to the language. But now, because of what Chair Houseman is putting into this, that you can't collect late fees, which is something that is in the contract. You can't collect late fees. You can't evict people. I understand that's from the governor, but you're trying to continue that out. So maybe you could help us understand, Chair Houseman, what the rationale there is. And Madam Chair, I will have some other questions.
Chair Houseman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are talking about the transition during the peacetime emergency. How do we keep stability during the peacetime emergency? It hasn't ended yet. One of the things that Minnesota Multi-Housing has testified to over and over is they have been surprised at how high the rent payments are, that the crisis in non-payment of rent isn't as great as they thought. So all of our indications are that we have managed a certain amount of stability, just perhaps because of the housing assistance that we provided. And this bill is all about keeping things stable during the peacetime emergency, which we're still in.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Madam Chair, and to Representative Houseman, you're actually talking about making it so that they can't have an increase during this totality of time. What if they have an increase in their costs that the landlords are carrying right now? You're prohibiting them from doing this with a now apparently year-long off ramp. That's problematic for me. Here's what I will also point out is that Chair Houseman said in her intro that she wants to prolong this in order to get housing assistance plugged in. And the CHAP program, or COVID Housing Assistance Program, that was brought in last year, we've gotten information from multiple sources that the injection of that money, which I believe came in December, People were applying for it. Actually didn't get sent to landlords until not just a handful of weeks ago. So the 60 days that are being provided is kind of a token offering, because it's going to take longer than that. Certainly the state government and federal government don't move that fast. Very, very concerning. But I guess my problem is that beyond the procedural shenanigans that were pulled just a little bit ago, people who own these properties are not able to manage them in the manner in which they see fit. And that is troubling. Again, I have a lot of friends that I know that are landlords, and they have a tremendous relationship with them. But in a couple of examples, if somebody has just effectively chosen to ignore paying their rent, they are going to be, and I believe this is in the bill, they're going to get a notification. Well, that official notification is now sort of an official notification to them to stop paying altogether. So if you're already behind, let's say 30 days, and you get that 60-day notification, well, now you're going to effectively deprive the landlord of an entire quarter of rent by the time you're fully dislodged from their property. That is very troubling. You're now going to effectively destabilize their portfolio. They're going to make it so that they cannot be able to cash flow. And if that happens enough times, they're going to be unstable themselves. But there's no provision, no allowances for them in this bill at all. It's effectively a very renter heavy bill. And I'm just really troubled that we aren't considering the people who own the property. We're just holding a gun to their head saying, well, you're now going to do this and you're now going to do that, and we're not going to sit down and listen to you. You know, the insertion of the house language is sort of an official declaration of, well, we don't really care what the landlords think, because that was reached during with compromise. This is not. I just find this whole effort very, very troubling. It is a trampling of the Constitution. It's saying to people who entered into the contract, the renter gets all the benefits of the doubt, and the landlord gets nothing. You can't raise your rent. If you raise it last year, nonpartisan staff confirmed that people will not be able to increase the rent to tenants at all this year. So thanks for that. I just think this is an exceptionally troubling bill. It is not reflective of a partnership or a willingness to work together. It is hyper-partisan, and I hope it dies a fiery death. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, okay. I do want to remind, members who are part of this hearings that we are still in a peacetime emergency, and there are like thousands and thousands of people who are not working, not because of their own, but because of a pandemic. And so we have to make a choice about, whether or not we are going to exacerbate the amount of people who are homeless. We have been very generous as a state to really support and advocate for landlords to make sure, and I know it hasn't been easy for landlords nor tenants, but we have stepped up, and so has the federal government, to help landlords. I just felt a need to say that, that has a ripple effect of not only in housing, but also in our educational system for families, for children. And this just can really make things so much more worse if we have landlords at this point where people have not gone back to work, to say that we're going to also increase their rent on folks who have not yet been able to go back to work. We have something in place. So what I want to do here, you guys, is that we have three other members who would like to speak to the new house language that is trying to stabilize our state. And so I'm going to go on and ask a couple of questions from each of our members who would like to speak to the new house language and move this forward. So I will start with Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my questions are for the bill's author, Representative Hausman. And my first question is there anything in this bill that requires a tenant to apply for this emergency assistance? I look at all the money, the federal money that has flowed into the state of Minnesota for emergency assistance, $100 million through the CARES Act, $375 million from the CAA, and then another $152 million from the ARP. That totals $627 million. So my question is, is there anything in this bill that requires a tenant to seek emergency assistance or to seek after these dollars?
Representative Chair Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if Minnesota Housing is on this call, but I heard from the commissioner already last week. We have now the new process set up for this additional federal money coming in. Overnight, I mean, they literally just watched these applications flow in, thousands already. And again, Madam Chair, I don't know if Minnesota Housing is on to give that number, but it is a staggering number. We don't have to convince anyone. They are coming by the thousands applying for this federal aid.
Madam Chair, thank you. Well, Representative Hausman, I don't know if you received an email. I don't know if this particular housing provider emailed everybody or not. It was somebody that wasn't my constituent, but I did get an email from this gentleman a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about how he has a house that he's renting out, and both people have worked the entire time through this pandemic, and they have not paid him a dime of rent. So under your bill, if I'm not mistaken, people could go a full 2 years without paying a dime in rent. Representative Hausman, how do you expect, you know, let's say for round numbers, a person pays their rent is supposed to be $1,000 a month. How in the world are they ever going to get caught up if they're behind $24,000 on their rent? Will these dollars that are flowing in from the federal government, will they cover all of that $24,000 so these people just walk scot-free? And under this bill, there's no requirement that they seek public assistance for their rent. There's no requirement on here that they have lost their jobs. Representative Housen, I'm at a loss. Please explain all of this to me.
Members, nothing,
Chair Housman.
Madam Chair, members, nothing removes the responsibility for tenants to pay the full amount of rent owed. I have enough respect for the people of Minnesota. If they know all they're doing by not paying their rent is their debt gets higher and higher and higher, I have to tell you, I have way more respect for the average Minnesotan to know they would not do that, because they would know there is going to be a cliff at some point. And I just have more respect for them. Members, what this bill tries to do is put some balance to the power dynamic between the landlord and the tenant. In the state of Minnesota, for years, we have done very little in tenant protection. This year, we're talking about tenant protection, and the backlash has been huge to those efforts. And I keep going back to one example. 43 states provide some sort of notice of eviction. We're one of only 7 that does not. So Minnesota has not been doing anything in the area of tenant protection, and this is some attempt to balance that power dynamic.
So, Madam Chair?
So, Representative Scott.
Thank you. So what I'm hearing the bill's author say is Representative
Groff. Excuse me. One moment, Representative Scott.
Sure.
In my last statement, I wanted to share that I was going to have 2 questions each from each member to ask questions. The purview of this committee is around the fiscal part of this. This is a conversation that was had in housing, but I wanted to give members at least an opportunity to ask questions. And so I think you're at your two max. And we have Representative Petersburg, and we also have Representative Hurtosh.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could just push back on that, this committee, you're right, it is fiscal parameters, but this committee voted to inject itself in there by changing policy. We made a policy-based amendment on this bill. So I appreciate that if we were up against a hard timeline here, the floor session's not till 11 o'clock, Madam Chair. And so these remote hearings make things more difficult for you, but I see no harm in making sure that members of both sides of the aisle understand the consequences of this bill. Again, the calendar is open until 11 o'clock. That's a two-hour committee hearing for a bill that is having a huge change in housing policy. Madam Chair, it's your committee. You can run it the way you want. I see no harm in allowing members to have a more informed discussion on this before the floor session.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Garofalo, for that reminder around time. And you're correct. We did inject some language, policy language into this, and I do want to remind, and I do want to give our Republican members an opportunity to talk about that language. But again, I do would like to also give other members an opportunity to ask questions. And so I don't want to spend too much time on just one member asking a huge amount of questions to only have the next member do the same thing. And so, and it's okay. It's okay that we do not agree with the language. I do understand that in this body, we have a lot of landlords who want to support landlords. I myself live in a district that there are plenty of landlords. And, we've also created opportunity for landlords to get money from the state and from the federal government. And I haven't had this abundance of emails that come to me, which I would expect I would if landlords were being truly harmed here. But I have not had an abundance of email from landlords in my district. And I'm going to make some assumptions that because they have been able to tap into the federal dollars and the state dollars that we have been so generously given to landlords in this time of a peacetime pandemic. With that, what I would like to do, Representative Scott, is I will give you another question. Then if we have time, we will come back to you with other questions. So go ahead, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate it. And I'll just wrap up with these comments. You just made the case that Representative Garofalo was making before, that what is being happening here, and Representative Hausman, Chair Hausman alluded to it too, you want to make permanent changes. This isn't just about the pandemic, and this isn't just about the peacetime emergency. You want to codify into law some of the changes that the governor made in his peacetime emergency declaration in the executive order. And members, to say that it's been so generous of the federal government to give landlords money, let's be realistic here too. The Minnesota Multi-Housing Association has said there hasn't been that big of an uptick in evictions and people not paying their rent, maybe a 5% increase. So what you're doing with this bill is you're creating a year-long off-ramp that's going to probably require another off-ramp, an off-ramp for the off-ramp, because people are going to be so far behind potentially on their rent, those that do want to abuse the system. And Representative Hausman, I have confidence in most people, they'll pay their rent, but there are cases where they're not doing that. And this isn't about the landlord getting what they need or the tenants, and it's an uneven playing field. This isn't what this is about. This is contract law. This is about the DFL coming in here and trying to change permanent law under the guise and under the shiny object over here, which is the pandemic and the peacetime emergency. So members, I would encourage a no on this vote, and I'll look forward to more discussion on the House floor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, thank you, Representative Scott. We do have a hard stop at 10 o'clock. We do have session at 11 o'clock, but as you know, members, we also go into caucus. I'm not sure what the Republican caucus is doing, but the Democratic caucus will be caucusing at 10 o'clock. And so with that, we do have a hard stop to take a vote at 10 o'clock.
Madam Chair, we do not have a hard stop because of a DFL caucus meeting. This committee meeting started at 9. Again, I want to, you obviously, it's your committee and you have the flexibility to run the committee how you want. But the DFL getting together to meet in a private meeting, that is not a hard stop.
Well,
this committee, Madam Chair, this just started at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Limiting it to 1 hour for a substantive change in House policy, Madam Chair, I don't think that's appropriate.
Representative Groffler, I'd just like to also remind the members that adopted language that has been moving through the House in the Housing Committee is not really adopting new language. We're moving language that has been vetted here in the House, in the Housing Committee.
But Madam Chair, it is also replacing consensus bipartisan language that moved us towards an agreement.
We're in the House. We do what we do in the House. We do not have to agree with the Senate. This is language that has been moving in the Housing Committee.
Right, but Madam Chair, the minority party is under no obligation to agree with the DFL. Just because you guys want to do something doesn't mean we have to sit down, be quiet, and shove rags in our mouths.
Yeah, we're not asking
you to. It's a seriously problematic issue.
Representative Groffler, we're not asking you. I'm not asking you to do that.
You are, because you're terminating the committee meeting in 9 minutes.
We do.
All we're asking for is the ability to highlight these concerns. We understand you guys have the votes and you're going to pass it. Mm-hmm. This is a seriously problematic issue. We're simply asking that you not artificially limit the meeting to 1 hour.
So, members, I do want to remind us that because of our previous passage of the housing omnibus, this committee has already voted on the fiscal element of this bill, which is our primary jurisdiction. To the extent that the members wish to discuss the policy of the bill, that conversation will be best held on the floor. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author of the amendment here and the bill. I'm confused because I think I hear differing information from you that at least I don't understand. It sounded like you said that this bill amendment was trying to deal with the difficulties in evictions and so forth during the peacetime emergency, when I thought this bill only dealt with after the emergency. The other thing that you said was that the reason for the 60-day notice was so they have time to access for the assistance. But then later you said, well, they're accessing it right now. So I don't understand why they can't access it now, and why are we dealing with something that's supposed to be for the pandemic during the emergency for 12 months afterwards. If I could get some clarification there, I'd appreciate that.
Sir, is that
Madam
Houseman?
Madam Chair, they are applying right now. It takes a while. With that massive number of applications, it is simply going to take a while for Minnesota Housing to process those applications. So they're applying, but the process of accessing those funds is going to take some time as they process those thousands of people.
Okay.
So if I could have my second question, if you're going to limit us to two.
Yes.
Thank you. So that just kind of brings to the point that really they know now whether they're in trouble or not, and they could be accessing it. I'm not sure why 60 days later, and the bill also doesn't indicate whether or not 6 months after the pandemic ends or the executive orders ends, somebody loses their job. They could end up with 60 days after that for no reason concerning the pandemic itself. But my second question is in regards to Section 3, when it talks about the court beginning an investigation. To me, it's unclear as to when they need to do that. Do they do that after the 60 days, or do they do it when it first starts, et cetera? Because obviously we know that court investigations can take, well, anywhere from 60 to 90 days additionally before they can make that investigation. So that's kind of unclear to me as to when the court would make that investigation, and maybe Chair Houseman can clarify that for me.
Chair Houseman.
The Senate language, by the way, I'm told by somebody who just contacted me, also makes permanent changes to the governor's emergency powers. So there is still some clarity we need to get there. I think you're asking a technical question that perhaps Mary Mullen, our House Research staff person, might want to speak to.
Ms. Mullen?
Chair and members, I think the question is about Section 3 of House File 12. The court has to conduct an initial review of eviction filings. This would be done both during the peacetime emergency and for the 12 months after the peacetime emergency. And they would be looking for to make sure that the filing complies with the requirements of this bill so that the action hasn't been filed, isn't an improper eviction filing. You know, various different types of evictions are allowed under Section 1 during the peacetime emergency, and various different kinds of evictions are allowed under Section 2. So the court would be reviewing an initial eviction filing as it comes in during that period of time. And it would apply to, you know, any eviction that's filed.
Representative Hotas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hausman, you have mentioned that Minnesota is among the outliers with regard to providing tenant protection. And I'd like to just point out that tenant protections are provided to all tenants in Minnesota within the four corners of a contract, and that's called a lease. What we're doing here is socializing the for rent privately owned housing stock in Minnesota. Housing stock that does not belong to the state of Minnesota. Members, your actions really are promising to move private capital away for the long term from providing additional housing stock and future housing stock. The consequences of that are going to provide less future stock, decrease the supply of resulting stock, which will ultimately result in surplus demand with less housing stock, which will reflect increased rents and higher housing costs, which is moving away from affordable housing. Liquidation of this existing stock into the of the owner-occupied housing stock will be a result of this action. Members, tenants who are delinquent have had notice under their existing leases, and it's called a contractual deadline. 60 days notice to simply extend the expiration of any executive order by 2 months. This does nothing to protect tenants or landlords for the long term. Everything you're doing is exacerbating the affordable housing crisis for the long term. And members, lastly, it promises to tighten the mortgage financing and the capital or supply for those who have been willing to take a risk and be a housing provider. Why would anybody under these laws be incented to create more private rental market? All that's going to happen in the end, members, is we're going to see a liquidation of privately owned rental stock, which will become owner-occupied rental stock, particularly in townhouses and single-family homes. This is a tragic development. Members, please vote no to this. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo, would you like to do your closing statement?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I want to highlight for you and members of the DFL, the reason why we are bothered by the fact that you're terminating this meeting right now is the DFL has been using the House rules to stop us from debating these items. So the Senate language that was adopted, we can't even offer that as an amendment on the House floor now. That'll be blocked under the DFL's interpretation that it's not germane because it has Chapter 12 changes in it. So if you're wondering why we're having this discussion now, it's because that was your guys' decision. You won't let us have the debate anywhere else. So I do, Madam Chair, I understand the difficult job you're having here, but limiting this to 1 hour really isn't that's not fair and it's not appropriate. Regarding the subject of the bill, what we're seeing right now is, unfortunately, the black helicopter conspiracy wing of the Republican Party is being proven right. People who have said, you know, this emergency authority, Walls and the DFL are never going to end it. They like the emergency authority. Think about it. The emergency authority accomplishes what? It allows people that you can't evict anyone for not paying their rent, well, as long as the emergency authority is in place, that's going to continue. What else do they want? They want moratoriums and limitations on what landowners and landlords and private property owners are able to do in terms of terminating leases, in terms of bringing in new clients, in terms of modifying, working with people to modify leases. It eliminates all their authority to have control over their property. So the reason why this debate today is so important, and the reason why this bill, in replacing compromise language with partisan left-wing policy, the reason why it is so disruptive is it is validating people's concerns that the DFL are never going to let this emergency end. This emergency authority isn't going to be going away anytime soon. We said this last year, that the concern is that Tim Walz is going to keep this emergency authority until Election Day. And the actions you guys are engaging in today is further evidence that you are looking to build a case to keep this emergency authority in place until November of 2022. This is concerning, it is disruptive, and it's something that people need to have a higher level of awareness on. The bill you're voting on today moves us away from compromise, agreement, and resolution to these issues. And so, Madam Chair, for that and many other reasons, I would encourage members to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I would just like to state that by no means we want this pandemic, this peacetime emergency, to continue on. You know, we would like to see, you know, people continue to, you know, to receive vaccinations, wear their masks, social distance, wash your hands, all the things that the CDC recommend that we do so that we can get past this pandemic and go back to a regular life. That's what we really, really absolutely want to do, is to go back to normal life where you're like, yeah, we're tired of this, you know, but there's a process. The pandemic, COVID-19 showed up. And because it showed up and killed over, over 500,000 people, it's why we're in this position right now. It's why people are not working. It's why individuals are not able to really pay their rent. It's why we put protectors in place so that people would not be homeless on the street, further spreading COVID-19. And members, I just want to remind us again that, you know, the House Ways and Means is the fiscal element of the legislature. And because of our previous passage of the housing omnibus, this committee has already voted on the fiscal elements of this bill, which is our primary jurisdiction. So to the extent that I have allowed members to discuss it, it's way beyond our preview in this committee.
Preview.
Preview. Thank you, Representative Hotas, that I knew you would show up for this. You know, it is beyond what was really allowed in this committee, you know, and this conversation is best really been held on the House floor. And so with that, members, Vice Chair Olson renews her motion that Senate File 1470, as amended, is recommended for placement on the General Register. Ms. Sparkin, please take the roll.
Chair Moran?
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund? Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan?
An aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas?
Of course, no.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
No.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill, excused. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto, excused. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. There are 17 ayes and 10 nays.
There have been 17 ayes and 10 nays. The motion prevails. Senate File 1470, as amended, is recommended for placement on the general register. Thank you so much, Chair Hausman, for your leadership. Members, that concludes our agenda for the day. Staff will provide notice when the committee needs to convene again. With that, we are adjourned.